from the studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
And once again, it's another Saturday morning, and I'm hoping I'm broadcasting live because on the control panel, Windows is doing his little spinny thing saying, I'm ignoring you.
How often does it do that?
I don't know, but right now it's still going round and round and round and round. So I'm trying to bring it up on the other computer just to make sure that things are working.
I should have another computer or something up so I could listen to it, but I don't.
Yeah, you might hear yourself.
I only have one computer on today. I don't have any others at all. Just one. So anyway, how? That was all I got up. That was supposed to be, hi, how are you? How's it going? And hope everything is good. But how will do.
How will do.
If it's good for the Indians, it's good for me.
That's right.
How?
How? Well, the advantage of having here in the studio, since I got some good equipment, four monitors and whatever, brought up on the other monitor, and it says, yes, we are actually doing it, no matter how the other computer is going. Or so I'm mad at the other computer anyways, because it decided to crash. And by the way, people, here's a lesson learned. I'll share this with you because it'll save you a lot of trouble. If you have an HP computer and you get this little message saying that the smart system, which identifies the health of the hard drive, is bad, push F1 to continue, and nothing happens, push F10. It's not dead. Push F10, then F1, and then you can go in and log in and then do your backup. Do not, under any circumstance, and you can do a search on the web and find this out too, including the HP website, do not, under any circumstance, use the HP backup, because what will happen is that, yes, it will back up all your data. It will not back up your programs. It will not back up your registry. It will reformat the primary hard drive. And then you're left pretty much having to start over anyways.
I've got a problem with that with Candy's computer at the moment. It decided to come up and say, no operating system.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely zilch. And I open it up the back and try to take the hard drive out, and the hard drive doesn't want to come out, so I got to figure out that. But I don't want to lose it, because I've been yelling at her for 2 years to make sure you back everything up. She did for a while, but that got too much trouble and to use too many disks, and so she decided not to do that. So she's got 2 years of stuff on there that she hasn't backed up, and now she's upset about it because she's liable to lose it.
Well, just don't reformat that hard drive, because there's things we can do. But anyways, welcome to the program. This is not computer support, although we could be. Hi, Robin, that's Cliff, and we're waiting for you to give us a call at 646-721-9887, 646-721-9887. It's open line Saturday again. We've had a pretty good response last Saturday by doing it. We do have some topics, but anything's fair game, and we had some pretty good callers last week. I mean, it was great.
Right. Same people can call if they want to, but other people are welcome to as well, and we'll be more than happy to take lots of people calling. I mean, we'll limit the size of the calls or the length of the calls if somebody else is calling in.
Absolutely. And just about anything's fair game. And by the way, if you are literally one of the 3,000 people that listen to us on the archives each week, once again, thank you very much. It's one of the reasons why we're here. You can always send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com, and we do have a website at krbnradio.com as well.
And you're welcome, by the way, if you're one of the 100,000 people that have stopped listening or listen just part-time. And you can, all of you could listen at once if you want to.
Yes, and speaking of 100,000 people, we are getting very close to that mark about having in the 2 years we've been on here, about reaching 100,000 listeners. So, yay! Very excited about that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So if you all want to send us a dollar, that'd be okay.
Yeah, that's the old box.
Only a dollar. That's all we need.
Only a dollar.
If everybody wants to send us one. Now, if we're only going to get, 50,000 of you, send us $2.
That's right.
Or if you have money to burn, send us $5.
Yes. Your donations are not tax deductible, so.
Really? That's too bad.
Yes.
That should be.
It is. Anyway, 646-721-9887. An announcement that next Saturday will be our, more than likely, our last broadcast on Saturday because due to a schedule change on my part. So we'll be announcing changes for that. It's one of those things that, yes, we make a little bit of money off this, but not enough to pay the bills. Unless you send us $500,000, then broadcast any day you want us to. But in the meantime...
Send us $500,000, we'll broadcast every day.
Exactly. We'll even get other people on here besides us.
It's amazing what can happen with 500 grand.
That's true.
But anyway, speaking of 500 grand, the Oregon legislature has passed a road bill that's going to cost them big money, I think. They're determined to pass something that will increase the income from, because see, people are using less gas. They're going less places, and they're using smarter cars, not necessarily smarter cars, but cars that use less gas. And they're using, overall, less gas where they're going. And unfortunately, the state is getting upset about that. So no matter what, they're going to get their amount of money.
Right.
So they're determined to make their money regardless. And so, next time you turn around, they're going to be getting in your wallet and taking it out just in lump sums.
Well, that's one of the things that really kicks me off is it's just like smoking. I don't smoke, but the whole point is they don't want you to smoke. And so they raise the taxes and all of these programs. And then as people start not smoking, they start complaining, well, we're losing revenue. Well, same thing with the cars and gas models. You have the hybrids, and the electric cars. Now they're going, we're losing road tax money. So now we have to make up the system. And what Cliff is referring to is Oregon and a few other states are doing, Oregon just recently, the governor just recently approved a bill which allows up to 5,000 people in a pilot program to install a GPS system on their car so they can pay 1.5 cents per mile. So it's basically a metered system. Oregon's been experimenting with this type of system for the last couple of years, and if they can get the system in that they really want to have, and the federal government's also looking at this as well, on the surface you might go 1.2 cents a mile or half cents a mile, whatever they decide it's going to be, isn't that big a deal? It's like comparable to about spending 30 cents a gallon and going about 30 miles roughly. Here's the kicker. This, and on the original bill that in Oregon, is that because it's a GPS, for one, it keeps tabs on where you're driving, when you're driving, and also what conditions are around you. So, for example, you may go to work at 5 a.m. and get charged, say, half a cent a mile in tax, when you come home, say, at 5 p.m. during rush hour, it may jump it to 1.5 to 2 cents, called a congestion tax. There's also talk about putting tolls on bridges. So if you go over a bridge, that'll be added on. Now,
happening already.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Under the current system, when you go fill up your tank, let's say, you go spend, like in my case, I got a 16-gallon tank, so $50 to fill the tank. I'm paying for everything up front right there. Under the new system, you go in and put in 16 gallons. You don't know how much it's going to be because it depends on where you went. Because that's what the system is designed, once it goes into full implementation, this pilot program is just non-commercial stations at the moment. But
in the first place, I don't believe they're going to charge it at the tank because there are going to be people shortly that just aren't going to fill up a tank. They're not going to. They're going to have electric cars, or they're going to have cars that are hydrogen or whatever, and they're not going to be filling up the tank. So consequently, they can't get their money at the tank. They're going to have to put it on as a state tax, or as a they're going to charge you just like they do your income tax or somewhere in there. They're not going to do it at the tank.
Right. There'll be other ways to get the money out of you. But what I was going to say is that under the commercial system, when they decide to implement it, you know, beyond this 5,000 voluntary system, which, of course, you know, once something gets in there, when you go fill up, that's when you get billed for the miles and where you travel. So, again, you know, you don't know how much your bill is going to be really. But the whole idea, I mean, I'm totally against it. I mean, just for nothing else, I don't want a GPS in my car tracking wherever I go. And then if you go to California, that may have a similar system. You know, as soon as you cross the border, say your 0.5 cent per mile in Oregon might jump up to 2 cents a mile. You don't know.
Well, it's all ridiculous, because it's going to have to be a different system than that. As far as I'm concerned, I don't think this idea will gel and come to fruition. Even after they've implemented this one, I guess they've already passed the one bill or something like that. But I don't think it'll continue as a real thing, because it's got too many holes in it, too many things that you could do to not pay for this amount. I mean, first of all, who says that you can't drive across the border, whatever border, Idaho or any of these other borders, or two or three borders for that matter, doesn't make any difference, and buy a car that doesn't have this in it and drive it back home and continue to drive without it. Now, I'm sure that if you get caught at it, there'll be a huge fine or something like that, some ridiculous thing, which is ridiculous in the first place. But, I mean, it might be worthwhile to try. I mean, the thing is, there's got to be a different way of doing this.
Well, the way that they're going to do it in your example is that if you have a vehicle, like an older vehicle, and you don't have the GPS put in it, you'll be paying the regular tax like you would now. It's just that the idea is to give you a little bit of incentive to have the system put in, because otherwise, why do it? I mean, it costs you, what, $250 to have it installed?
Something like that. But the point is, if you're buying a new car, mm-hmm. which is what's going to have it in there, right. Then you're going to drive that into the state from somewhere else, who's going to know that you don't have that in there? Who knows who's going to know that you do have it in there? I mean, you know, who's going to know about buying a new car? What are they going to do, come out and inspect it?
Well, here's the thing. Okay, let's say, for example, let's look ahead, I don't know, 5 years, and they say that it's going to be mandated, all new cars have to be manufactured with this thing. Or even the ones now that just plugs into your computer port is how that works. With a lot of new cars having communication systems built into them, like the OnStar and other type of interactive internet access, you don't know if this thing's broadcasting or not. I mean, it's just like the mystery of how your car computer works. That's a highly guarded secret. Same thing, just like some of the newer cars have the black boxes, like in airlines, that record the last 30 seconds of a vehicle crash. We don't know what's in there and what it's telling us.
I think it's about time that you recognize the fact that you don't have any anonymity, you don't have any privacy when you're in your car, you don't have any privacy when you're outside of your home. I mean, you know, if you use the telephone or anything like the internet or anything like that, you don't have anonymity. You can't say no. You can't be unnoticed. I mean, it's just going to happen that way. That's just, you know, the days of being completely private are gone, unless you're not, you know, I know that I'm being tracked all the time because I'm on the internet all the time. I don't drive and I don't do other things that would be catching me up, but it's still, I know I'm on the internet all the time, and so consequently, I'm sure people are aware of what I'm doing and when I'm doing it.
Oh, yeah, just like I did an article on this a couple of weeks back, you know, here in Eugene. If you're going at the corner of Beltline and Delta, there was an interesting camera that was put up on the corner. It's not a standard traffic light control camera. This one actually had the LEDs around so we can see at night. And I'm going, what the heck is that for? That's kind of weird. And what this one is doing, it's looking inside your car to track how many occupants there are. And something else that, speaking of cameras real quick, Washington State, I just read an article, and I've actually seen these cameras. It's just a pole in the middle of the, I believe it's I-5s, in the middle of the median. It's like it's four cameras looking both directions, and I always, well, you know, what the heck are these things for? You know, because they don't look like the type of cameras used for the news services. Well, I found out those are actually tracking cameras that log your license plate, mainly for commercial vehicle usage, but even still with license plate reading technology, you know, again, they can, you drive by this thing, they know you're there, they know what time you're there, and if they're looking into the cabs as well, they also know who's in there.
And what you're doing. So if you stop along the freeway for a few minutes for a cookie, they're going to notice.
Exactly.
Oh, well.
Yeah, but
I don't mind that. I don't care. You know, if I'm doing something that I'm not supposed to be doing, if I'm doing something that's against the law, if they want to catch me at it, that's fine, because I'm not going to do it. Yeah. But the thing is, you know, I don't care if they watch and see what I do. I don't care if they watch and see who's in the car. Now, the only thing that I would be worried about, because I have been known to carry more than the allotted amount of people in the car at some time or another. I haven't done this for a while, but I remember when I was younger, you know, 10 of us would clamber in the car and go someplace. Well, most cars are not designed to carry 10 passengers, and that's rather difficult. You have people sitting on people's laps and so on and so forth. Everybody gets somebody sitting on the lap except the driver, which is actually, in some cases, I've even had that happen. But
you put three people in the car now and you bottom out.
Oh, yeah. Well, really? I never even thought of that, bottoming out. But my car never did. I mean, I suppose it would if you went over much of a drunk, much of a bump. At that time, probably 20, 23 years ago, I was in California, and California freeways were very carefully built, and they didn't have all the bumps and lumps that they have nowadays. And the state of Oregon has huge things. I mean, you can go over a brand new freeway and go over huge bumps that would bottom you out if you had that. But in California, their highways were built better than that at that time. Anyway, I don't know that they are now, but we didn't have any problem with that.
Yeah, this is like in Eugene, 6th and 7th Street, speaking of roads. There's one time that they repaved both streets. 6th and 7th, by the way, is a one-way, and it's three lanes each direction. They did a beautiful job. I mean, one of those types that you actually want to write the department, you know, the freeway department, whoever is responsible for it, and just say, hey, good job, guys, you know. They did that good of a job.
Yeah.
And then it was just like somebody saying about a month later, literally a month later, oh, hey, you know, Charlie, we're supposed to put some pipelines down here.
And they tore it up again.
God.
Yeah, you that's so ridiculous, because you'd think, I mean, I'm sure if you went to them, they'd say, yes, we have a plan, and they'd show it to you. But then they don't look at it. They don't listen to it. They don't use it. I mean, they've gone to the trouble of designing a plan that they're supposed to follow, but when it gets right around to the time to do it, they don't. They just do whatever they want to.
These guys don't have a plan. I mean, just like recently, and I'm going to pick on Eugene for a little bit more. We're installing traffic metering lights. Those are the lights as you go into the freeway. You know, if it's supposed to be really congested, then it comes on and lets one car in at a time. Well. Some hotshot in the capitals, you know, Salem, decided, oh, hey, we got a backup on the road, and we need to do that. No, that's not causing the backup. But anyways, as far as design, we're talking about millions of dollars per each section, intersection. And anybody that lives in any state that has traffic metering knows that during rush hour, it backs up to the main arteries. that feed that. Well, here's what happened as kind of after the fact, and this is from their own words, that on one of the streets, they're going to have to spend an extra $2 million to move a bus stop because the traffic is going to get so backed up on a side artery that people may not even be going onto the freeway that they have to move the bus stop.
Well, I don't know. This business of traffic is getting to the blind, ridiculous, and you know they've got to come up with some different ways of solving the problem. They've come up with lots of ideas, but none of them have been very good so far.
Well, you're not focusing on the problem. The biggest problem is that Oregonians don't know how to merge.
Well, I know the simplest way to solve the problem is to do mass transit and to make mass transit feasible for people. I mean, first of all, you got to make mass transit run often enough. In other words, your buses have got to go enough places and run often enough that makes it worthwhile. I can remember when I went to California. Down there they have mass transit down to a T, or at least a lot better than they are now. I lived out, I didn't live downtown. I lived out in a suburb. But we had a bus that went by every 15 minutes during the day. And in this particular case where I lived, it stopped about half a block from where I lived. Now, the furthest you'd have to walk if you lived in this subdivision that I lived in would be five blocks to get to the bus itself. And to run it that often, and then, of course, now, mind you, that just goes downtown and connects with another bus that takes you wherever you want to go. And this was San Leandro, which you could get to San Francisco, San Jose, all those places. So it was a very convenient system, and it was also very inexpensive. And so consequently, I even set my car on the side of the road in this particular case because my dad wouldn't let me sit it in the driveway. But anyway, and started taking the bus because it was cheaper than driving. And so, you know, and plus the fact, you know, if it's convenient, it's really nice because on the bus you can read the newspaper, you can do this, you can do that, and you don't have to worry about running into people. So, well, hopefully. So, but anyway, if they make it attractive and easy to use, people will. And they haven't done that around here yet.
Right. Exactly. And I was just going to bring it up. Speaking of convenience, like you hit the key, you hit the nail right on the head. If it's done right, here's an example. Over Eugene Springfield, for people that don't know, is population altogether is like about 175,000. We're just separated by I-5. Well, to get from, say, East Springfield over to about mid-Eugene, which is, I'm trying to bring it up on Google Maps here, but I'm just going to guess about 10 miles or something. It's not that far. If you take the Lane Transit District bus, and I'm going to make a point here in a second, it will take you roughly an hour and 5 minutes to get there. Now, Lane Transit District has started putting on their website, you know, you enter the route you want to go, and it says, hey, compared to a car, your $3.50 for the fare to get there is saving you $1.50 versus it would have taken a car. Well, the problem is that if you took the car, it takes you 7 minutes. If you take the bus, it takes you an hour and five.
You haven't taken the car recently, have you? I've been gone from one side to just about what you're talking about. Going from one doctor's office to another doctor's office. We went to a doctor's office in Eugene, and they decided we needed to go to the one in Springfield, and we had to go across, and it took a lot longer. It took like 45 minutes to get there because of all the stops and all of the crosses and things that you had to go through to get there. It's significantly longer than 10 minutes.
Well, I'm just using this as the example. I have it up on the screen now. It's to take that route that I was just talking about, takes an hour and 12 minutes according to Lane Transit. And you got to, go from, three different buses to get there.
Yeah.
And they're saying that travel time is 1 hour, 12 minutes, costs $3.50 versus $4.53 in driving. Where if you take the car, again, using the Google Maps as well, from the same places, it takes 7 minutes to drive there.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say is the Google Maps are mistaken. They don't consider the fact that you're driving downtown, that you're driving city streets. I mean, 7 minutes, true, if you had to go straight from one position to another, but that's not the way you drive there. I mean, you have to, you know, weave in and out, and it just isn't the right, that isn't the way it goes.
Yeah, well, it's still a significant savings to drive. But then again, you, depending on where you're going, if you're going down University and you're trying to find a place to park, because the University of Oregon has actually said that their goal is to make it difficult because they want you to use mass transit. But that's neither here or there, except for the, you know, I mean, getting back to the per mile deal, that's the other thing, too, is that they, you know, the state, everybody wants you out of your car. They want you to take the public transportation or pay more and make it financially prohibitive.
Well, the thing is, like I say, they can make it as financially prohibitive as they want to until they make it more convenient and more expedient to take the bus or whatever thing they're pushing to get you off the road. They're not going to get anywhere because it's not convenient to take the mass transit at the point. Oh. If you were to go outside of the front of your house, how far would you have to walk to get to a bus stop?
I would have to walk probably about a mile and a half.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. There's nobody's going to do that. Nobody.
Especially when it's raining.
Yeah, especially when it's raining.
And definitely.
Like I say, where I lived, if I had to walk a half a block, that was okay. Now, interestingly enough, where I lived, of course, is in California, and it didn't rain that much because they didn't have any bus stops that were covered or anything like that, so I had to stand out in the middle of the street to do it. But I knew when the bus was going to come, are fairly close, and I could be out there within 5 minutes of when the bus was going to come, so I didn't have to stand out there any length of time, and I didn't get that wet because I didn't have to go very far to get there. And at that particular time, the buses were inexpensive enough that I actually saved money over driving. So that's the way I did it. I mean, it was worthwhile to me, and I could go. Now, it's true, it took me a little bit longer than if I drove myself because I was driving clear across the bay and over to San Francisco and going across the bridge and all that sort of thing. But it was just so much more convenient because I didn't have to pay the toll. I didn't have to do any of this stuff. And it was just so much more convenient to sit back and read my newspaper. And pretty soon I get there and I'm happy.
Right. Well, like you said, a key word, it has to be convenient. And it doesn't... One size doesn't fit all, especially if you're going to be hauling, you know, going shopping or anything like that.
Well, it's true. I didn't ever take the bus and go buy 20 pounds of whatever and then try to take it back home on the bus. I never did that ever, never tried it. So consequently, it was just me on the bus. And it was more convenient. And I was going to work and back, and so it wasn't a problem. If I was going to take something to work with me, I would drive, you know. So I had the option of either way. So.
Well, speaking of driving, I wanted to get back to the per mile tax that we're talking about. It's, again, I'm looking at the it is Senate Bill 810 that they're talking about, and hopefully I just didn't lose my pillies because I just went and looked at it. Some of the requirements that they're doing, I've got to find my spot again, is it always gets me concerned when they talk about, I mean, if one thing is voluntarily and they say, yes, you can leave. Well, you know, it's just like any tax at all. Once it's in and they say, well, it's only going to be a temporary tax. Well, there's no such thing as a temporary tax. But also when they're under the Section 6 of the ordinance that they're talking about, the system has to be accurate, of course, for deleted, collected, open system so anybody can manufacture it. It has to be resistant. The resistance of the technology to tampering, the ability to audit compliance, and other relevant factors that the department deems important, and then, of course, different ways of collection. So you know, again, that's just part of the thing about what it can do. But it,
well, that's, it's going to cost you a huge amount of money just to put the system in place.
Right.
And that's the thing is, we've got to do it. Somebody's got to do it because as it goes, we're losing, you know, 11% at the moment. On 11% of the money have been that's been coming in is not coming in now because people are not driving or they're driving a more efficient car. Excuse me. And so that's, you know, 11% now. Then it's going to, and it's only going to go up. So at this particular time, they've got to get a handle on it. And they've been doing this task force for years. I mean, it's not, this is not something that they just recently started.
Oh,
this
absolutely.
Has been going on for a while, and they haven't come up with a solution yet that's usable. And so, you know, how long is it going to take them to do this? They've met 9 times from November 30th of 1903. 1903. Yeah, right.
Yeah, wait, that's the horses, you know, we got to...
2003 to try to do this, and they haven't come up with a solution yet. So until they get on the ball and come up with, you know, maybe they haven't got the right people on the task force to come up with the right answers. Or maybe they need to, I don't know what they've got to do, but, you know, I don't think they should start implementing something yet until at least they come up with something worthwhile.
Well, here's something that really scares me. Section 9, I'm just going to read subsection A and B because it says that the certified service provider, let me skip through that, authorizes, charges the employees of sections B. Personally identifiable information means any information that identifies or describes a person, including but not limited to the person's travel pattern, per mile road usage charge, account number, address, telephone number, electronic mail address, driver's license or identity card, registration, plate number, photograph, recorded images, bank accounts, and credit card number. With all that, you can drive your car down the street.
Well, you know, they're trying to put this whole thing into the car. I think it better be smart to put it in your ID card, which is at this point usually your driver's license, but put that kind of a thing in your ID card. They can do that, and it goes with you all the time, no matter where you are. But the thing is, everything, even if in your car or in an ID card, you can, for example, leave your ID card at home and not drive, not take it with you.
Wait. How can we have an ID card for the car when it's racial profiling if we have it to go vote?
What? If we have it to what?
Well, to prove you're a citizen to go vote.
Oh, vote. I thought you said boat.
No, vote.
Well, the thing is, this racial profiling is a bunch of crap as far as I'm concerned, because you're going to have to, you know, it doesn't have to, I mean, what does that have to do with racial profiling? You know, they know who's in the car anyway.
Exactly. I was just throwing that in there. Yeah.
But the thing is, they should be tracking the people, the person, not the car, because the car, you know, can go anywhere. And it's too easy to disable or not do or buy a car from somewhere else or something to get around that point. But if you have it in your ID, and, of course, you want to – here's the ridiculous part. You know, even regardless of how they do this, when you go out of Oregon, they've got to figure out how to work this to continue to work outside of the state, because it's got to, you know, whatever it is, it's got to turn off outside of the state, or else at least it's got to be compliant with whatever state you're going to, so that it's charging their requirements instead of Oregon's requirements. I mean, this has got to be such an elaborate system that it's just in almost impossible to dream up.
Well, you're exactly right. That's exactly what it does, is that when the system becomes implemented, well, for now, if you drive outside of Oregon, it'll stop recording.
Yeah, why will it stop?
Say again?
Why will it stop? It's going to have to have a special thing in there for it to stop. I mean, that's difficult to do just by itself. to know that you're going outside of Oregon, and so it's got to stop. I mean, they're trying to. Their idea of putting things in there is charging different things at different times, different things if the road is busy or if it's not busy. This is going to be impossible. I mean, it's not impossible, but you're going to have a thing in your car that's 4 feet by 4 feet by 4 feet, and it's going to take up half of this in room entire side of your car, and still. It's gonna constantly be broken down and not working, and I just can't see it.
Well, here's the thing, and if anybody's wondering what we're talking about Oregon. Just recently passed a bill, Senate Bill 810, which allows, I believe, to 3,000 or 5,000 people to switch over from the 30 cents per gallon road tax to the voluntarily to the 1.5 cents per mile tax with the GPS system as part of the pilot program that Oregon's been talking about for years. If you look at, to kind of answer your question, if you look at, say, for example, my Garmin GPS system, it has a function. It can show me in detail where I've been through my whole trip.
Okay.
So all it has to do is it just downloads or communicates with the computer, like say the state's computer, that, okay, I've been on, say, I-5 to Portland between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. So it knows that. It knows, because of other sensors on the freeway, it knows how much traffic it is. So if there's a congestion, like in Portland, let's say around, during the time I'm there, it may charge me extra for a congestion tax. Our congestion fee because I went on this route. And so all that is stored, and memory's cheap now, so it can store the devices can store quite a bit. And then we go to the pumps, that's when it downloads the memory into the system, and at that point it determines how much you owe them.
Okay. I understand what it's doing, and I understand why they're doing it and how they're doing it, and I just don't think it's practical.
I don't either.
I mean, the simple fact is, they're going to have to build a machine. First of all, they're going to have a computer at downtown Oregon someplace, I guess it would be a Salem, but they'd have to have a computer that's gargantuan. I mean, it's got a separate file and a separate system for every car in the state. And the cars that come in the state from somewhere else, it's got to have a separate system. And so this is going to have to be a gargantuan computer. And they've got they haven't even built anything like that at this point.
Actually, first of all, they use a thing called the cloud, and then you got Google with their data centers, and some other places are coming up with data centers. And when you talk about these data centers, we're talking about I don't know what the word is above terabytes, but huge amounts of storage. So storage and keeping that type of information is really not that impossible anymore.
I'm not even talking about keeping the information. The information is easy to gather and easy to keep, but you've got to have something that processes it. And so consequently, you've got to have a huge computer somewhere that can process all of this different kind of information. And I don't think we have one.
Well, apparently they got it all figured out because, they got...
Oh, wait a minute. That doesn't just because they're talking about it doesn't mean they have it all figured out. They're going to try, like you say, on 5,000 people, 5,000 cars, but they can just put a partial thing in and do their own little test to see if it's practical or not. But I don't think it's practical.
Well, and again, I ask the question is that, this is just the beginning. The federal government has toyed around with this idea. Some other states have also toyed around with this idea. But let's get back to, let's say, it becomes a federal law.
Well, that's what I think is going to happen. And when it becomes a federal law, that's another thing entirely. Then all of a sudden, the federal government can use a computer in every state and use the cloud, as you say, call it, and every place else to do things with it. And then it becomes practical because they have the money and the time and the inclination to do all of that. And, of course, it means a lot of money in their pockets. But, again, can you imagine? One of the things that's going to have to happen is things are going to have to have to equalize. In other words, all states are going to have to be more like each other. You can't make preference to any individual state. In other words, it can't be done as one different in one state than it is another. It's going to have to be more equalized in order to do that. But that's what it's going to have to be, is I believe it's going to have to be national in order to make it possible.
Well, who knows? I think it's a bad idea altogether. And
I agree it's a bad idea, but I agree also that it's going to happen.
Well, and as I'm scanning this ordinance here, and I'm going to have to read it more in detail. Why read the bill? I'm just noticing references to, and I'm trying to figure out why, Ordinance Chapter 577 relating to the Oregon Beef Council contributions. It's like, what does that have to do with the road mileage tax?
Well, because they're one of the biggest people that spend money.
I don't know. I think it's a totally bad idea. And again, it's just one of the other consequences, too, on this is that the car insurance companies would love to have a way to track your individual mileage. Right now, most of us have the luxury of, we claim that we do an average miles, so many miles per year, and that's what they based your rates on. But just like Progressive's Snapshot, which actually records, because it plugs into your car computer, which actually records how you drive, your throttle, your braking, et cetera, to try and get a better idea. It's just more methods of getting money out of you.
Well, that's true, and we're going to have all of that anyway before long, because it is, the federal government and state governments or whomever, they want to keep track of you, as well as do the insurance companies. Everybody wants to keep track of what you're doing and when you're doing it, and they're going to do it no matter whether you like it or not. It's just until they come up with a way to do it. They're just working very hard on that at the moment, that's all.
Exactly. So, Cliff, how do they call us if somebody has a topic they want to talk about?
Well, it'd be very simple. If you want to talk about something that's different than what we're talking about, or if you want to talk about what you have, and what perhaps maybe you want to disagree with us. Maybe you have an idea that you can come up with that would make this whole thing work. 646-721-9887. Now, that's not hard to remember. 646-721-9887. And an easy way to make it easy to remember, that's a good one, is to write it down in big, bold letters and stick it on the refrigerator, or stick it on your computer, or stick it on the monitor, or wherever you want to stick it. 646-721-9887.
Exactly. One last thing I'll say on this issue is I was just out of curiosity looking up the Progressive Snapshot. And on progressive.com, it actually says privacy statement. It says what information does it collect. The snapshot device records the vehicle speed and time of day. When the device is disconnected from the vehicle, it also records identification information. Other information such as miles driven, rates of acceleration, and braking is derived from the speed and time information recorded by the device. So that's what that little device does. And that's
At the moment. And it'll be, when the insurance companies want something, they'll add to it and change things. And when the state wants to find out something, they'll add to it and change things. And it doesn't make any difference. Your car is going to tell you where it's going and what it's doing.
Right.
And as I say, it's going to be not very long before your driver's license is going to tell you what you're doing and where you're doing it and how, when you're doing it, and all that sort of thing. So you're going to, in order to be anonymous, you're going to have to leave your driver's license sitting on the dresser.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is that it says, when we may disclose the data to others, it says we will not share snapshot data with any third party unless it's necessary or appropriate to service your insurance policy, prevent fraud, perform research, or to comply with the law. For example, when we're legally required to provide snapshot data, such as response to a subpoena in a civil lawsuit or by police when investigating the cause of an accident. So, and the list goes on. You can go to...
So any damn time they want to, they can get a hold of you, period.
Right.
And why would you think we'd be different than that when the federal government is doing that in mass?
Yeah, and the thing I like is that it says here right at the bottom, it says, it's completely voluntary. Remember, the snapshot participation, or the participation in snapshots, completely voluntary. You may choose to stop at any time.
Well, that's at the moment. That's of this 5,000 people that are going to be involved in the voluntary system. But when it becomes a law and when it becomes a part of the driving system, it's not going to be voluntary at all, believe me.
Well, and here's the other thing, that, and any truck driver knows this, but it would pertain to these type of things. Even though it says it doesn't collect, you know, speed and whatnot, speed is easy to calculate if you just know,
point A and point B.
Exactly. So, and citations have been given out to truck drivers that have gone through, say, a scale, say, the port of entry from California to the port of entry of Washington. Well, they know it takes so long to get across the state, and if you happen to get there, sooner, there's only one way you could have done it. Either you fix the transporter or you're speeding.
Well, nowadays you don't have to be caught speeding. You can have a ticket sent to you. I mean, so many people have been sitting at home and you open up a letter and there inside the letter is a ticket and a picture of you showing that it was you in the car and you weren't even aware that the picture was taken. I mean, it's all happening right now. And again, anonymity is a thing of the past.
Yeah. So I think it's a totally bad idea. I think it should be avoided at all costs. Unfortunately, it's probably going to be inevitable sometime in our lives that they're going to push this through. And as usual, we the people will have absolutely no say in what's going on.
That's the thing. And that's one of the big things that I'm upset about, is that we have no say. But there are certain things that there's no way we can have any say about it. I mean, in a way, this is one of those, because the information has to be there. I mean, we're not going to be able to sell the gas for long. I mean, there's too many people now that just are not buying gas. They're not buying gas for at all anything, because they're buying vehicles that don't use gas at all. And so consequently, there's all of that great big sum of money that's not being collected as a tax at all.
Yeah.
And they've got to come up with a way pretty soon to come up with that money. And California is going to be another one that's going to be helping us out. Now, if you want to, any way you look at it, we're going to be caught in the middle of this whole thing. And we're going to end up paying, I was going to say the same amount of money as whether we're paying gas tax, but it's actually going to be more. Right. It's always going to be more than it was originally with the original tax. 646-721-987.
Yeah, give us a call.
Somebody's got to call us and give us, somebody's got to have a different idea or a better idea or at least something.
On this or anything else. And we have some opinions too. We're going to talk a little bit about George Zimmerman. And I have, before I get to that, because we also have a what the heck segment we want to pull in here. But first, this is, I guess this news just came out today, I think. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano is stepping down. Not that I have an opinion on that.
I don't think Janet has done a bad job. She's been okay. If she's stepping down, you say stepping down. If she's stepping up to run the University of California,
right?
That's a step in the right direction. She's
going
to be working harder.
Yeah, it might be a step up. Of course, she's been also a huge advocate for illegals to become citizens, but that we won't go on that. But
wait a minute. A huge advocate for illegals to become citizens?
Yes.
So am I. I mean, we've got to do something about what we're doing with them. And they should be, well, of course, see, there's more to it than that. You want them to become citizens so that you can charge them taxes, so you can charge them this and that and the other, and make them responsible for themselves. To have anybody in the country that's completely free of anything and can do whatever they want to, that's the thing we don't want to do. We don't want people that are anonymous again, and we're going to do everything we can to bring them into the system and make them responsible for themselves. And if once we do that, it's going to cut down, I think, all the amount of people coming into the country, because it's going to cost them just as much money to be here as it is to do something somewhere else. And then the other thing is we've got to make the people who are hiring them responsible.
Agreed. Well, here's the thing, and I was listening to a talk show last night. They were touching on the subject, and there was a guy from India that really had some good points, because he is here legally. His brother's trying to get in, and it's, you know, it's expensive. It takes time to come in, and he's very upset about, you know, these people that come in through the back door, and now we're just going to hand them amnesty. Now, you make a good point. We got too many people here. Give them like a green card. Make them apply for it, and then do the better enforcement of, you don't have this, you don't get hired, and you know, compare the Social Security card or the I-10 number to the name, and if it doesn't match up, then the employer can't match or can't deduct their wages. But until you do that, until you get better control, you don't want to cheapen the people that have really spent the time and effort to do it right.
Well, we already have. We're already beyond that point.
Yeah.
We've got 11 million of them in here illegally, and so consequently, if that hasn't cheapened the ones who spend the time and the money and the effort to do it legally, the poor people, it's too bad. I mean, I believe that it's a possibility that we should be spending more money on law enforcement of the corporations and the people who hire these people. In other words, we should dry that part of it up. If we could dry that part of it up and eliminate any, like, hospitals that take them in for free, I mean, it's a rough life. I mean, you're going to hurt some people, possibly, but you've got to do something about it, because they're taking over. I mean, I don't mean that in the bad way, but the point is, we've got too many people here that are on a free ride. And we can't, every one of us that's paying taxes and doing things legally, we're paying for all that.
Well, it's not just that. It's just, I'll use Oregon for an example again. Oregon used to get driver's license to illegals until the Homeland Security thing, you know, where they're threatening that you couldn't use your Oregon driver's license for ID. So Oregon, along with a few other states, had to change their criteria to get a driver's license. So what a person has to do, now Oregon has an 8-year driver's license. So what we had to do to get our license renewed is that we had to bring in a birth certificate to show that we're a U.S. citizen. Now, recently, as of this year, the governor passed a bill, I believe it's passed, or at least it's going to be passed, where if you are not a documented U.S. citizen, that all you have to do is show that you've lived in the area for a year, and you can get a provisional 4-year license. So basically, all the trouble we have to go through, request a copy of our birth certificate, and show what we have to do. If you're illegal, no problem. Just give them an envelope with a bill that shows you've been here.
Well, I've had to have a birth certificate available for every time I've done that. I mean, I've everywhere, Washington, California,
exactly.
Arizona was the only place. Arizona, yeah, Arizona was the only place that I didn't have to have a certificate.
Yeah, exactly. And just like Rush Limbaugh is saying, how, you know, as the government's trying to bring the illegals out of the shadows, he goes, "I want to go into the shadows." He says, "You know, as the illegal or undocumented, you're exempt from Obamacare. You're exempt from, like I said, the Oregon driver's license rule, and exempt from a lot of other things. In fact, they were even talking about that some illegals don't want to come forward and come out of the shadows because if they become legalized, then they got to pay taxes. And you know, like a lot of us, we give away, you know, we give up 20% to 30% of our money just in taxes. And they said, why come forward and be illegal? I'm going to lose 20% of my money.
Well, we need to make it a law, an enforced law, that you can't make any money unless you do become legal. In other words, all these people who are hiring these illegals, we've got to start wrapping them up and putting them in jail.
Right.
Not the illegals themselves, because it's to their benefit. The illegals, they're making a fortune off of this because they're not paying any of the things that we have. And yet when they get sick, they go to the hospital or go to the doctor and they get their benefits. They get the same benefits that we do, and they don't have to pay for them. And that's got to be changed. I mean, it, like I say, it's going to hurt some people. I'm sure it is. But the thing is, we've got too many people that we're supporting just totally illegally. That something's got to happen. And of course, see, what happened was, what was it, 11 years, 12 years ago, whatever number of years ago, that we did all of this. We gave them free entrance to the United States. They've and made them citizens, and they're coming in now, hoping that's going to happen again. And everybody's talking about doing it again, and you've got to stop talking about doing it again, because everybody's just going to come in here. I mean, right now people are flooding into the United States because they think we're going to do this whole thing again and give them amnesty and make them all free citizens. And all that money that they've made during that time up to this point is going to be theirs. And charging people a huge amount of money to become citizens isn't the answer, because they're just not going to do it. So we've got to work on the other end of the things. We've got to stop going after the people who aren't, and not spend as much money on them, and spend some significantly more money on the employers and how they're going about hiring people. And it's not easy. We're going to have actual physical people go out and check different corporations, because they're going to do it quietly and not tell anybody. And when they're doing it that way, then how are we going to find out unless we literally go there and look and see who they've hired and what they're having them do and make sure that they're legal people?
Well, and maybe the marketplace would be a good thing, too, in addition to the fines of the employers. Like, for example, in 2007 in Portland, Oregon, Fresh Del Monte, doing an ICE raid, more than 165 plant workers were detained to be processed because they were illegal aliens. So, in other words, the Fresh Del Monte knowingly hired these people, you know, for the reasons why they usually do.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They're going about it the wrong way. They were being detained. They were being the people that were here illegally were being being detained and being beat up because of this. We should go after the company. They're the people who have the money. Del Monte is a huge company, so they should be charged a huge amount of money in order for every one of the people that they hired. They should be charged maybe $50,000 or something. And you start making it hard on the company itself, and you'd be surprised how fast things will change.
Exactly. In fact, as the article I'm reading, which is the Lodi News Sentinel, June 14, 2007, by the way, I mean, one of the people that was arrested was saying that it's not fair. They're hardworking people. They're only here to make money, to put food in their mouths. They're not here to hurt anybody. Well, that's not the point. The point is that you cross international lines, you're here illegally. Well, ICE also, according to the same article, showed that a check of employee records at one point, so I'm quoting, showed that only 48 out of nearly 600 workers at the plant had valid Social Security numbers. 48 out of 600.
Well, then next, like I say, okay, you've got 48 out of 600, so let's go 550 people. And for 550 people, this company has got to cough up the money to send them back to their country, and then cough up a certain amount of money per person for the amount of money that they didn't spend on taxes and such things. So just assuming there's been here X amount of time, let's say we sent people out every 6 months. So for 6 months they've worked here, and so we go for 6 months, and so we charge this same company, not the persons, not the individuals, but charging the company the amount of money that they would have paid in taxes and other things, and it's going to be a huge amount of money. Plus the fact that 550 people are going to be gone because we're going to have sent them back to the to whatever country they come from, and at the charge, at the expense of this company, and so they're not only going to be losing the amount of money that they have to pay, but they're going to be losing the amount of money they could be making in the meantime, because where are they going to come up with 550 people overnight? That's not going to be easy to do. And so unless they hire 550 more illegal people.
Right. In fact, I'm trying to look it up here real quick. You never hear about these people being charged with falsifying Social Security numbers or falsifying Social Security card, which I believe is a federal crime, but I'm not sure. I'm looking it up now if I can.
Well, there's a lot of it being done.
Right. But you never hear about that because that's the other issue. But in either case.
I don't know if they're doing it or if they're just not telling us. But the point is, again, if that should be even a bigger thing, if they're falsifying, of course, then you've got to put them in jail, and that's going to cost us money.
Right. Exactly.
Do you realize we've got approximately 40 times more people in jail than any other country?
Yeah, it's a happening place.
No. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, we've got a huge amount of people. I mean, and huge amounts of money are being spent on jails and buildings and of course keeping them and feeding them and everything. We shouldn't have to do that. We shouldn't. There's something wrong with our system here that we're doing this. One thing is we should find a way again for them to be working it off. And of course, that's another story entirely.
By the way, the violations for that can be under Title 18 of the U.S. Code could be it'd be guilty of a felony and shall be fined under Title 18 and could be imprisoned for not more than 5 years or both.
Okay, you say violations of that. What is that?
Of falsifying or using another security card.
Well, again, I think a lot of our problems would be solved by just simply doing our job as far as catching people is concerned. It's not a matter of fines and things as far as the people themselves are concerned, because the people that are here illegally, like you say, a lot of them are just here to work and to make a living. A lot of them are here. I know a huge amount of people come into this country to have babies, so they'll be American citizens. We need to fix that too.
Exactly.
I mean, anyway,
since we have 25 minutes remaining in the program, 646-721-9887. We still got another segment we want to do, but first, before we get into that, we have a what the heck are they thinking?
You have got to be kidding me! What the heck were they thinking? Can you actually believe they did that?
It's Robin's What the Heck Are They Thinking Award, where Robin picks out some of the dumbest and most ridiculous headlines of the week. And now, with this week's picks, here's Robin.
Okay, I got two items on the list today, and one of them will lead into our final segment. Generally, if people who have been listening to this program a lot know that when I do these What the Heck, generally, Cliff doesn't know what they are. We don't discuss this in the pre-program planning. So it's just a surprise to him as it is to everybody else. I love doing it that way. But the first one on the list is that people remember that Snowden, who's the guy that leaked that the NSA, National Security Agency, is, and I'm sure that triggered a flag somewhere, leaked that telephone records are being tracked. Well, it's kind of had an effect not only on the fact that Snowden had to leave the country, but, you know, on other issues, and it's kind of got other countries or other, you know, other countries worried as well. And this one is kind of interesting. This article, which comes from USA Today, is entitled "Spooked by the NSA, Russia Reverts to Paper Documents and Switches Over from Computers to Typewriters."
Really?
Yes.
And I don't understand what kind of documents they're doing. I mean, everything?
A lot of the top secret stuff now, because they're saying that after the scandal and the spread of secret documents by WikiLeaks and the revelations of Edward Snowden, reports of listening, I'm kind of skipping through here, from the G20 summit in London, the practice of creating paper documents will increase, so says an unidentified source, probably because that was. So one key reason for using typewriters is that each creates its own unique signature that can be traced. But they said it also, I'm paraphrasing, is that they're not as easy to get information off of as a computer would be, or you know, using any other type of communication.
Well, I can't believe that Russia isn't smart enough, just as we're smart enough. You know, people seem to think that if you go online, you can get any information you want. I mean, if you anybody who's got any smarts at all can encrypt communications on the online, and they can encrypt it with a system that is no way you can possibly take it apart and get the idea out of it without knowing the encryption. And there's no way of knowing the encryption unless you're a part of the game. And so I know I was in the security agency when I was in the Army or in the military. And there are several ways of doing this, and you can have the information right in front of you, mm-hmm. and read it right in front of you. But unless you know what the encryption was, you can't get anything out of it. I mean, it just can't be done. And I've worked with this way too long. I mean, this whole thing is a bunch of malarkey. The fact that just anything that's on the internet is a free game. It's not. The military has all kinds of systems and all kinds of ways. Now, it's got to be, you know, got to spend a little bit of time and a little bit of effort and have a little bit of smarts in order to do it, but it can be done. And I just, this whole business of anything, this Snowden guy that they're talking about, in the first place, the federal government has already decided or disseminated the information that what he's got is no big thing. He's got some information that most people didn't know, but nothing that's going to be of any consequence to the government. And so consequently, they don't care about him. They would like to get him and put him in jail, perhaps, but it's not a big thing. That's why they haven't done it. You know, let's think about this. This is the United States of America, and if they wanted him, they'd have him.
Oh, just like bin Laden.
No, not quite. I suppose. I don't know. I've not followed, and it's been a long time since I've been interested in bin Laden. But, I mean, supposedly, I'm sure that he can. You know, bin Laden spent a lot of time underground. He spent a lot of time in holes. He dug holes and lived in them for a long time, and of course there's, you know, when you do something like that and there's you know, you're gonna not be caught. Of course, you're not also gonna have much of a life, and you're also not also gonna be able to accomplish anything. If I had to live that way, I mean, and if we've got him digging a place in you know, and he is to a certain extent, the different airlines have already refused to carry him. What airline? Somebody had him or at least they thought he was in an airplane, and they wouldn't let him land in all but about three countries in the world. And then they found out he wasn't there anyway. And so,
bin Laden or Snowden?
Huh?
You talking about bin Laden or Snowden?
Snowden.
Snowden.
This is just recently. And so consequently, he's stuck in Russia for a long time, and they want to get rid of him, and so on and so forth. So it's kind of a rough life to live, and they've already decided that what information that he's leaked and given out is no big thing. It'd be nicer if we didn't have that information leaked. But again, this is a country that's big enough, and we have enough systems available to us that if it's a system that somebody leaked, it can be changed instantly. And the encryption and system can be changed of how to do it. It's not that difficult to do. And like I say, the encryption system, you can know the system that is doing it, and it's still not giving you any information unless you have both ends of the thing in your hand and can decrypt it properly. And that's going to, not going to happen. There's not going to be very much that's going to get loose. You know, I don't know where he got and what information he had, but let's say he's got 6 months of information. As soon as he's determined that he has that, and as soon as he says something what he's got, then that information is all going to change.
Well, I don't think it's so much the fact that the information itself per se. It's just the fact that the NSA is actually doing this with Americans, and that I think that was more to the point, is that we've always been told that we're keeping a closer eye on other countries, but we're not really paying that much attention to America. Well, to Americans themselves. Well, in a sense, this is saying, well, yeah, we are. And I think that
anybody who thinks we weren't has got to be out of their mind. Of course, we're monitoring Americans. Absolutely, have been since, for example, what was it, the 60s, early 60s. I know, because that's when I was in the system, and we were monitoring Americans then.
Exactly. Anyway, 17 minutes remaining in the program. 646-721-9887. My second part of the what the heck are they thinking segment, which kind of leads into one other point of discussion, is George Zimmerman trial. They're kind of, well, we Cliff and I think that the prosecution kind of has a weak case, and they're kind of stretching. And what came out in the news recently kind of also backs that up, where the prosecutor, Richard Mattinetti, I'm probably mispronouncing his name, also asked the jury to be allowed to consider third-degree murder on the premises that Zimmerman committed, are you ready for this, child abuse when he shot the underage Martin.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Yes.
I mean, shooting a person is kind of abuse.
It is. But, the Zimmerman's lawyer called that bizarre and outrageous, and the judge kind of sided with the defense that, they're stretching for it, but who knows? I mean, they'll probably go back to the racist charge and call it good.
Well, if you're laying there on the ground and this guy is on top of you and he's pounding your head against the cement and he's hitting you in the head, in the nose with his fist, and this is obvious by they don't look very big because he didn't give him a chance to do much, but at least two places on the back of his head that have holes in them is what they have, and his nose was broken and was bleeding and so on and so forth. If this is happening to you, he's I think that's against the law. I mean, that's kind of hard to take. And so now, whether he thought it, if you don't think for a minute that your life is in danger, if you let that continue on, you got to be somebody really stupid. But if you do something about it, what are you going to do? I mean, he's on top of you, not you on top of him. And so consequently, the man had one possibility, and that was to reach in his pocket and pull out his gun and shoot him. Now, in this particular case, I suppose the only thing they could say is that shooting him, and they could have shot him in the the leg or the side or the shoulder or something, I suppose, and hopefully that would have made him stop. But maybe it wouldn't. And plus the fact, you know, if you're laying on your back and the man's pummeling you against the ground, and you don't have time to pay attention to exactly where you're shooting him, but just shoot. And the fact that he shot him, I guess, if not in the heart, fairly close to that, I mean, that would be where you'd want to shoot anyway, the biggest part of the body. And consequently, I don't think that I would have done something. I mean, I would have done that myself. If that's all I had was a gun, then that's fine.
Like you said, if somebody's picking you up and smashing your head against the sidewalk, and I mean, even if you had a stick or whatever type of weapon, you're gonna shoot for whatever's convenient. I mean, you can't just say, "Excuse me, sir, would you mind not beating the crap out of me? It really hurts."
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, you know. And shooting him in the leg is going to be just about that, because you know this kid is going to be just as desperate as you are, and because you know he knows good and well that he's doing what he's doing is against the law, and so consequently he's not going to want to get caught at it. And so I the only possible excuse, I mean maybe they can. I dislike the idea of this guy, they call him a wannabe cop.
Right.
And constantly he wants to be a cop. Well, I think that's bad too. I don't like the idea of him getting away scot-free because he can, you know, do whatever he wants to just because he's a wannabe cop. So consequently, I think he should get something. But what he should get is just a few years in some sort of a jail or something. I don't know. I'm not sure what second-degree murder gives to you being accused of that, but that might be the one. First-degree murder or manslaughter, that may be the one too. I don't know. But, you know, a few years is fine. I just don't think you should be put in there forever.
Well, I guess it really comes back down to the who threw the first punch type of thing.
Doesn't make any difference. Doesn't make any difference of who threw the first punch. This guy is on top of you. Doesn't make any difference if you threw the first punch or if he threw the first punch. Florida's law, stand your ground law, if you are in imminent danger, if you feel that you're in imminent danger, in this particular case, if your head's being pummeled against the ground, against the sidewalk, not just the ground, the sidewalk, I think you'd feel that you're in imminent danger. Simple as that. And so you can do whatever is necessary to protect yourself, and that's all I did.
Well, I agree. I mean, what do they expect somebody to do? Is just like, just let him pound the heck out of him and just kind of lay there? And I mean, when somebody's banging your head against the sidewalk, I mean, that is absolutely life-threatening.
Well, yes, I would think so, yes. That's not to speak of the fact it hurts like hell. And so consequently, you're going to do something. And you know, if it's between times that you get pounded against the cement, then fine. You know, but he wasn't stopping. He, you know, just if you're laying there and you're being done, that's being done to you, saying, you know, please get off is not the answer.
Right.
Just going to happen.
And the deal about the hoodie. I mean,
what is that?
Well, I mean, I don't understand really how the. I mean, they're claiming racial profiling, you know, everything. I mean, I'm sorry, but I thought we were getting a lot better as far as.
Oh, you're wrong about that.
Well, wait, you know, as far as.
Like the gal who called us last week was, we'll tell you.
Okay, but what I'm saying is before Obama, you know, I thought we were getting a lot better as far as race relations, and then once Obama came in. If you say anything negative, is, well, you're a racist, you're a racist, you're a racist. And so that's what they're trying to push this on, is that it was a racial profiling. It was, you know, we're all Heinz 57 if you want to get really down to it.
Well, and if you'll look again, if you'll look at the information that Mr. Zimmerman gave, all of the information he wrote down, all the information he said, never once did he mention race, ever. And so I don't know that he is just smart enough not to have mentioned it, or if it was not a big thing to him. The fact that he was being pounded against the sidewalk. That was the big thing.
Right. So he was concerned about the fact that here is somebody in their community that didn't recognize, didn't think they belonged, and he was following them around, apparently acting suspicious. Now, whether Martin or Zimmerman should have pursued the way he did or not, we don't know, because, you know, again, we only know what the hearsay, but...
Well, again, now, wait a minute. You've got to go back and get the information about what was happening before he ran around and saw this guy. There had been many, many instances of breaking and entering and the people, the homes in that area around there. And he knew this was happening. And of course, he didn't know that this was the guy that was doing it, I don't think. I'm not even sure if he thought he was the guy that was doing it, but here he was. Around and out and doing whatever he was doing, and Zimmerman was basically going to find out. Well, when he went out and followed him to find out, that was when the guy attacked him, and mm-hmm. he ended up on the ground. So consequently, he was actually, again, he had already been. The only thing that bothers me is he had called the police. That's fine. And that's what he should do. He had called the police. But the police, the operator had told him to back off, to leave it alone, wait till the police got there and let them handle it.
Right.
And he didn't do that. He went after him anyway. And I can understand that, because the chances are if he had left it alone, the guy would have gotten away and would have gotten nothing, because the police couldn't get there fast enough. And so consequently, he wasn't going to do that, and he didn't do that. But now, there's a matter of whether he should have or shouldn't have. But the point is, once the guy got a hold of Zimmerman, he somehow or another, I don't know how he even got Zimmerman on the ground, because Zimmerman, I thought, was bigger than this kid was. But maybe the kid was very strong and very, very, he had maybe some sort of, I don't want to say, skill in. Well, he had some sort of skill in self-defense, because he got him down on the ground, and so he knew what he was doing. And once you're down on the ground and some guy's pounding your head against the ground, again, that I consider imminent danger. And I, you know, shooting him with a gun may be overkill, but on the same token, at least it did the job, and without it, could have been Mr. Zimmerman that was found dead instead.
Right. And also, I'll reiterate this point here, that we wouldn't even be talking about Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman, if the commander in chief, the guy that's supposed to be responsible, didn't open up his mouth and bring it to nationwide attention. You know, I'm referring to Obama's comment, you know, and at the time, why he's commenting on local issues anyways, because otherwise this would have just been a real clear case of self-defense. It would have been done, over with. Zimmerman wouldn't have been, what, a year now in jail? Or the 2 years?
I don't know.
Anyways, a long time in jail. His life is ruined, even if he's found not guilty. And, you know, again, versus if Obama didn't open his mouth, it would have just been another cut-and-dry case, self-defense. Boom, you're off. Have a good life.
I don't know if I agree with that. I do agree that Mr. Obama opened his mouth when he shouldn't have, and that's why he's not opening his mouth now. People on television have been asking, where's Obama now? Why doesn't he talk about it? Why isn't he saying something? Well, he's so much better off if he keeps his mouth shut. Of course, that's our president, and we don't really expect him to keep his mouth shut very often. So, I don't know. But, again, I don't understand exactly. I followed this whole case a long time on television. I've watched what's been going on. Because it's interesting to hear how the lawyers are doing what they're doing. I like to see them operating, and in a real instance, a real case, not on you know, some television show, because what they do on the television show, I don't think is very legitimate. But these guys were good, and how they did things was good, and how they went about them. It's going to be really, I really think it's going to be very interesting to see how this actually pans out, how what actually happens with it. Right now, they've had 56 witnesses and 200 different. I mean, they spent 12 days going over this. So I think they've covered it fairly thoroughly, and yet, you know, they asked people how, you know, they were doing this thing about the voice on the call that was heard in the background. And, of course, the people who knew Zimmerman said it was him, and the people who knew Trayvon knew it, said it was him, all to a person. So I don't think they accomplished anything there as to who it is and who it was. So basically it's all down to basically we got the however whatever took place before, and however Trayvon got him on the ground, he was on the ground and being beat to death. And consequently, I think under that alone, you know, because that's, again, your perception is that you're going to get killed. Mm-hmm. And if that's your perception, then you need to do something about it. And what else is, if all you've got is a gun, you're going to shoot him. Now, when you're being pommeled in the ground, you're not too careful about where you shoot. You know, you're just going to shoot.
Right. You don't have time to really think about it. In fact, like our callers last week pointed out, is that even if he's found not guilty, he's going to have a heck of a time, because there are going to be people, and some crazy person is going to want to take justice in their own hands and either try to kill him or whatever. And then, like, you know, in the chat room here, they're talking about the new Black Panther Party. Who knows what they're going to do? They already put a bounty out for his arrest.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, if he has any smarts at all, he's going to move. He's going to move away and go a long ways away. Of course, you know, that's not easy to do either. He could have money. And I don't think he has a lot of money. But I don't think he's safe no matter where he lives around where he is now. So something's going to have to, you know, whether we'd have to put him someplace and help him move, we being the government or whatever. But he's not safe where he is now. And regardless of, and I don't think it's any amount of time is going to make a difference either. I think these different groups or organizations, you know, the Black Panthers and the different organizations are not going to forget this right away. So,
in fact, it's also a point, too, that our justice system is ran by the media.
Well,
or influenced by the media, I'll say that.
I don't think the justice system is. I mean, unless you consider being strung up by the Black Panthers' justice, I mean, I don't think that has to do with our justice system. They're not responsible for that.
Well, I don't know. All I know is that, you know, things are definitely out. And,
we're out of time.
And we are out of time, but... again, appreciate people listening, and thank you again to our people in the chat room. And we'll be back again next Saturday, 1 p.m. Pacific time. If there's anything that you'd like to talk about, please send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. And if you have a comment on today's program, also we invite you to send an email, talk@krbnradio.com.
And next week, by the way, if you have something that you want to talk about and you want to interrupt us and start talking about it, please don't hesitate to give us a call. We'll interrupt us.
www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.